Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage podcast. We are back today by onit.com, the total human optimization website. For those of you that are fans of the Cognitive Rampage, Joe Rogan or anybody else, I think you've probably seen Onit all over the place. I am a huge advocate of all of the products at Onit, I have to say. I do use daily the Alpha Brain and Earth Grown Nutrients. I'm also a fan of the New Mood there. Those are three of the main products that I use. I also bought a couple of their Primal Bells, and I love using the kettlebells in my workouts too, especially when I want to get a quick, powerful one in. I really love using it. All of the Onit products are in the Cognitive Cave, so anytime a guest comes over, they can partake in these total human optimization supplements. Remember, it's all natural there at Onit.com, which is what I like the best. You know, they're not selling you synthetic makeups of bullshit. I mean, it's real deal. I mean, they even advertise the ingredients in their stuff. So if you want to make it yourself and do it, they even advertise that. But they offer all kinds of things at Onit.com, food, supplements, even training. They have academies, they call it. So all types of professionals are talking about training, exercise, nutrition, supplementation. They even have a gym in Austin, Texas. It's wild, but I'm a huge fan of the Onit.com company and family, and I believe they even started to call themselves a tribe. We were calling ourselves a tribe first, but that's okay. I love Onit.com. I'm a huge fan. Check out all their products there at onnit.com. That's total human optimization at onnit.com. Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage podcast. My guest on the show today is very, very special. Very, very special indeed. Christina Cusack. She is a warrior and was just a blast to talk to in the cave. She is an advocate of legalization for marijuana, because mainly she knows it's a medicine and she uses it to treat the intensive pain caused by multiple sclerosis. She is on the front lines bringing awareness to multiple sclerosis as well. We talk for about 2 hours about her journey in life before MS and her journey that she's on now after MS. It gets really dark at times when we talk about some struggles with coping with the idea of that happening to you, but we also talk about some pretty funny things. We're pretty explicit about marijuana on this show. Christina has to continually smoke in order to sit still for a long period of time because of multiple sclerosis. So if anyone listening to the podcast is not comfortable listening about marijuana or even hearing someone smoke live on air, this is probably not for you. But understand that Christina needs this medication because of the pain. Her only choices really are, you know, marijuana or those deadly, deadly, deadly prescription synthetic painkillers that most of us know somebody that's been through troubles with them. But Christina is very inspiring. She's a warrior. Her attitude is everything. And I'll be honest, everybody in this damn world could take some notes from her. She really just doesn't have any time for bullshit. And she's just amazing. I hope you enjoy.
Oh, don't get me started. I can beatbox.
Do it. I put that in the intro.
I can freestyle.
Okay, here we go. Hold on. I'm going to drop a beat. Just wait. don't look at me like
that. No big look.
Okay.
I think you found your new intro music.
Oh. I'll give you some intro music.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That is too funny. I have to say, you are already a fucking blast. I gotta be honest. Already a fucking blast, man.
Thank you. You gotta give Danny a high five for the hookup, man.
High five.
Yeah.
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 And that was a little reference to my friends at the SNK podcast, by the way. Shout out to you boys that do the high five series on your show. I just stole that there. High five.
True.
You know, shout out to my boy Daniel McNamara, Danny Mac, a.k.a. Chicho. I call him Chicho.
How about Danny Chicho?
Yeah, well, he's actually, his full name on my phone is Chicho Little.
How about Chicho Chiquito? Chiquito Chichicho.
See, he's going to be hearing this podcast tomorrow, whatever, when he hears it. And he's probably sitting to himself right now going, well, why don't you tell him what I call you, Adam? I know he's sitting there.
Let me look on Facebook. I think he has a nickname.
Well, my nickname in his phone is Tubby.
Hubby?
Tubby.
Tubby.
He calls me Tubby.
Oh.
I used to be tubby as fuck. I was 45 pounds heavier than this.
I was going to guess Chicken Little. I don't know why. That's just what came to my head. Maybe I think that's what I'm going to put in you as my phone.
Chicken Little.
Chicken Little.
That is fucking awesome. I got to know more why I'm Chicken Little.
I don't know. It just came to me like that. Happens sometimes.
What's the story of Chicken Little anyway? How's that nursery rhyme go?
I don't know. Some slut chicken, like, let on this other hen.
Did you just call me a slut chicken? I think you did.
I think we're thinking of different stories. That's not the Chicken Little one. See,
that's why I don't have kids.
Yeah.
I can't tell kids stories. I'm just like, look, this bitch Cinderella, straight up, had to clean everything, and her sisters complained and thought that she was worthless, and then this jackass prince just can't make up his fucking mind on what bitch he wants. So he has a party, you know, and hollers, tells all of them to show up. You know, Cinderella gets lucky, you know, with the god, fairy, princess, whatever, mother, godmother. Fairy godmother. Wow, I can't believe I forgot that. But anyways, that hoe. So so she gets to go to the fucking, you know, party, and he dances around, and he starts pimping. All of a sudden, you know, he sees this Cinderella bitch come in. He's like, yo, that chick's fucking high. Fly, sorry. We pass it.
Oh, yeah. Just remind me.
Speaking of, I have to quit hitting the table. I'm so bad. But anyways, so it was just some bullshit that, you know, she fucking loses her shoe, which is just a pain in the ass anyways, you know. Why don't you wear shoes that fit, bitch? Why are you running down the stairs? You know what? Why just one shoe? Why don't you kick the other one off and go faster?
You know what? And if it was a fairy godmother, wouldn't she make shoes that fit?
For real. You know what? I think that's, like, part of the catch. Like, here, I'm going to make you into, like, a princess and shit, but your shoes, they're cheap.
The better question I have is why, if she was so perfect for the prince and so memorable, she can't remember what her damn face looks like, and she has to be Al Bundy and putting shoes on everybody to find her.
You know, it's
like, I don't even recognize her. I wasn't looking at her. Her boobs were right there. I don't know what her face looks like.
Does that mean the prince has a foot fetish or some shit?
Ooh, maybe that's the backing of why the shoe.
It is Disney. Disney does that creepy sexual shit.
Yeah, I've heard.
Oh,
I gotta go. That's all you. Finish that up.
No, man, it's kicked.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you know, my friends, when they hear this, will know exactly what I'm talking about. So you gonna spark that?
Well, for those of you that have any question if medical marijuana has any help with those dealing with some serious shit, you hear the funny humor, the love, and the attitude. Because, look, I'm here to tell you, look, persons just don't normally walk around with that fun, I don't give a fuck attitude, you know. And I got to tell you, since you showed up mm-hmm. here at the cave, mm-hmm. you've had that attitude from when I first pronounced your name wrong, like a jackass.
It's cool.
Yeah, and I said, what did I say? I said Christina.
No, you call me Krista.
No.
Yeah, my name is Christina.
Yeah.
You call me Krista.
Never. Never.
Listen.
Either way, I loved how you set my ass straight. That was the point. It was like, she didn't say hello. It was, hey, motherfucker. You know, and she sets me straight and comes in. And I'll tell you, you've been out chatting with my wife, you know, in the living room. We've been hanging while Steve's been prepping everything, basically doing all the work.
Mm-hmm.
We're, you know, you're chatting out there, and I hear some of your responses, and this no bullshit, direct, you know, there's humor to it, too, which I love. And I couldn't help but think something.
Hmm.
How much of that is because of the fucking serious shit you've been through, and you ain't got time to be fucking around with politeness.
True.
I couldn't help but think that, and how fucking refreshing it is for me to listen to someone. I mean, you called me out twice on a podcast and called me a slut chicken.
Yeah, no, Chicken Little.
But my point is, like, you live with this pizzazz, and I've known you for 15 minutes.
Mm, yes.
Have you always been this pizzazz, or did when this happened, you just spark something in you?
I think we should give Danny a call and find out if I was all sparky. And then I will say I did go to college. That sparked up a lot in me, showed me a good time. I went to Florida State University, joined a sorority, Zeta Tau Alpha, one of the best. Yes, I'm super cute and single.
Gentlemen. I will second that notion.
So, yeah, I think I got to do all of that. You know, I studied abroad in Florence for 6 weeks in the summer. Every weekend I was in a different country. I went to Switzerland. I went to Amsterdam. I went to Prague. I went to Vienna, Amsterdam, of course. I mean, I lived it up. I really did. And by the time I had graduated and began a job, I was working. I had like a for serious job. And turns out the woman I was working for, she's just a fucking bitch. We had to rewrite the, I was the administrative assistant to the director of human resources for the state, okay, for a bank. And, she treated me like I was a freaking retard, and I think that's because she's jealous. She went to Florida, and she's a Gator, and fucking it was during the Tebow years. You can only imagine what it was like for me. You know, I fucking hate Tim Tebow. I fucking hate him.
You know what? To see that a football and a school rivalry, not football, but just a school rivalry that can go so deep as to where a boss would generally treat you like shit.
She got assigned to rewrite the employee handbook for the company and said that she wanted me to work on it with her. So what did we do? Oh, this is great. We sat next to each other in front of her computer and read through the current employee handbook and went sentence by sentence. Does that sound good? I don't know. Are we really getting the point across? I don't know. Should we fix the grammar? That's how that started. Then she got another assignment, so I took over and rewrite the entire employee handbook. Yeah, I have a copy.
So you're up working with the state, living your whole thing. I mean, how old are you at the time?
At the time, I believe I was 26.
So 26, lived a wonderful, amazing life of travel and adventure, and worked your way through college to graduate, find a good job, and you're 25, you said, right? 26, I'm sorry. So 26.
Time out. When you were saying work my way through college, yes, I did do a stint at Hooters. I had to try it. I just had to see. I needed to know if that was something like, I don't know. It worked out. I tipped out one night $400. So that was nice.
For a college. Yeah, man. And, you know, what's funny you say that is that thirst for experience that you just had to experience. I get that out of you right now. I mean, that's how I try to live my life, you know?
True.
It, who gives a fuck? It's worth the experience, right?
Yeah.
At least it wasn't a stripper pole. Or maybe it was.
No, not at Hooters.
No. Hey, and shout out to those that are doing it. Look, I'm not hating on you at all, man. I'm just thinking of, I'm a father of a 15-year-old, so sorry. Some of that daddy thing leaked out. No hate at all toward the strippers working their thing out there. You do what you got to do.
You can be the age of 16 to begin your first job working.
Yeah, just avoid it if you can, though, young ladies, please. It's not a healthy environment.
I'm just saying, your daughter's 15. You better keep an eye out. Yeah. I want to meet her.
She's awesome. She's fucking awesome. She's so much cooler than me. And she does, like, I don't know, she keeps me authentic, man.
True.
So we took a left field.
That's what happens, man. Okay.
I love.
My mind, I don't even know what your fucking question was, like, a minute ago. I don't even know what I was answering. I just drifted off into the story of the fucking gator bitch boss I had that fucking, you know, I hate that I'm saying that so much. I do. I say fuck
gator.
A lot.
And she's covering her
gator.
Mouth. And you can't see on the podcast, but she's quite bashful and kind of like, damn, I said that shit.
My mom's going to hear this.
I'm pretty sure your mom knows who you are.
No, she does, but she doesn't like it.
Well, I'm fucking going to tell you that I think you're a motherfucking hero.
True.
Whether it's a, I don't know, hero's not right because it's so fucking played out. I'm going to call you a fucking warrior. You're like the warrior behind you on the wall there. You know what I mean? You're just dressed.
That thing, is he wearing a loincloth?
I had a actual, when I was working, I'm not supposed to say
shit,
this.
Are those eyeballs, and did I just ash on your fucking microphone? Oh, my God.
We'll live.
Okay.
No, I actually, when I was working in, I'm not supposed to say this because I'm not supposed to do it, but I had a patient who is a traveling artist, if you will, and he drew that for me one day and gave it to me, and I thought it was cool as shit, and that's why it's there. It was going to be a back tattoo.
It speaks.
Cool. But that's how I see you is what I'm saying. It's more warrior-esque because a hero assumes that you took on some evil. And multiple sclerosis isn't necessarily an evil that attacks you. It's this thing that happens. You know what I mean?
It's one of those things that just kind of hits you out of nowhere. You know, as I was saying before I got distracted by the boss, I was okay. And then I worked there 2.5 years. I got a bonus, you know, in terms of career-wise, I was doing good, setting myself up. I was getting involved in human resources, not really what I was interested in. I graduated political science with a minor in criminology, criminal justice. So I really didn't do anything with human resources, but I'm just so great with people. You know, I did all the new board onboarding, like new employees, I almost said patients, new employees would come and I would do a whole, like, you know, these are the rules, like, read this, sign this, let's do your drug test, like, no big deal, you know, so I enjoyed that a lot, but things just started to go downhill. The more she talked down to me, I started becoming more and more sensitive, and what really got me is one day I just snapped, and I couldn't take it anymore, and I told her, I'm putting in my 2 weeks notice, I'm moving to New York City, and she's like, okay, all right, that's exciting. Well, I put my 2 weeks in, and then on my last week, I think it was like a Wednesday, let me hit this before it goes up. Oh, fudge.
You can say fuck. It's okay.
No, wait. No, shh.
Oh, mom's listening. No.
So anyways, I just, with no reasoning, no explanation, my family completely thrown off and confused. I went home one day for lunch because I lived in College Park and I worked in Winter Park. It was like right down the street. Got high, went back to work. Decided, you know what, I wrote an email and it just pissed me off and I was like, you know, fuck this bitch. So I grabbed my corporate credit card. It was the only thing I had left. And I walked into her office and I sat down and I said, thank you very much for this opportunity. I would like to go ahead and cut out early. Here's your employee credit card. I'm out. And I left. I go home, and I end up selling all of my shit, everything, as much as I could, and even my car. And I was dating somebody at the time, worthless, but He came with me. We drove up to New York City. I didn't have a place to go, but I had a friend that lived there. I crashed at her place for like a weekend because she was out of town, and walked around, tried to find people that were renting out their places. Met a woman off of Craigslist. She was renting out her apartment for the summer. She was one of those bicycle carrier people.
Yeah.
She was renting her place out for the summer and was like, you know, told me we could live there. So I met her, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And we stayed at her place, put all of our stuff in storage, stayed at her place. I worked temp jobs. I worked for a fashion designer. I worked for a trader on Wall Street. I worked, you know, I just did lots of different, you know, simple jobs, which wasn't bad at all. And I walked every day to work, and I was loving it. But for some reason, my instincts, I didn't want to be there alone, and the guy I was with could not sustain a job, and he had to go back, and I was like, I don't want to be by myself, and so I went with him and left a job that was offered to me to be the committee organizer for a architectural like group meeting type. So I had that, you know,
yeah.
And I left it.
I love it though, but you jump out on those adventures at no bounds, and you're doing this. So you were already living this no bullshit lifestyle anyway before any of this happened to you.
I attempt to, you know, because I hate being told what to do. I hate it. You know, you can ask me to do something, but don't fucking tell me to do it. You know, and that's how I live my life.
It sounds like it. Mm-hmm. How much of that attitude is, you know, helped you in what, you know, what the fuck you're dealing with?
It's only improved because I've had to look at the brighter side of things, you know. And with that, I've just taken everything, take each day to day, whatever comes at me, you know.
You're living in the now.
Yeah, I am living in the now.
Well, it seems like, you know, you do hear some stories out there of people that, you know, lived a certain way and then something, you know, tragic happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they go one or two ways, right? They go, sometimes they get worse and it gets bad for them, right? And, or they use that to propel themselves somewhere else, you know, and change. But it sounds like your lifestyle, your attitude toward life was already that. And then when this happens to you, you know, you say it improves it, you know, it kind of improves it and seeing the brighter side of what it is. What, I don't know, what illuminated to you? What was the brighter side of the life that became, I don't know, did it happen right away? So it didn't.
No.
All right, so it didn't just hit you and you're like, fuck this, I'm in. You were like.
So, moving on.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm interested because what I want to know, right, is I want to be inside, like, your mind of the drive and the experience. You know, what pushes you through to battle, you know, things like this, but almost not even see it as a thing?
That is a very good question.
I don't even know if it was a question. I think I'm just talking.
Oh, shit, man.
No, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just pointing out something that you're humble enough not to notice.
Perhaps there are things about me that people comment or mention that I don't pick up on, and I don't look for those types of things. I just am, you know. And I wasn't always that way. Growing up, I was a lot more timid, you know, and afraid. I've only become stronger. I have I lost everything, like I said. You know, I sold everything, moved, cashed in my 401k to try to stay longer. Couldn't keep up with it in New York. It was expensive. So, you know, I moved back and things started to, I moved back to my ex's house with his parents. and I was having a hard time finding a job. And so this is when things started to change. I would lay in bed all day long, and I would take a shower about an hour before he would come home and get dressed and just wait and then see what he wants to do for dinner. I was so very depressed. I just didn't, not that I didn't want to live, I just didn't know where in the hell I was going or what was going on. My mind, as I look back, it was just completely, I was on a whole nother planet, and I wasn't even high. So, those things started happening, and then my sister graduated from college, and my family, they had a graduation party, and at the time when I had come back to Orlando for the party, I weighed all of 80 pounds. I became a severe concern to my family. I had a couple drinks with my sister and a few shots, because in college you really, you drink a lot. And you're ready to, take shots and do, whatever. And so I thought I still had that. And, I just got ridiculous. I started acting, inappropriate. And, of course, my grandfather has us all on camera. But, yeah, I know.
Oh.
Yeah. So, that happened. And, I had been seeing a therapist, and the therapist gave me this flyer and told me that he had went to this center and had got information about it and thought maybe it would be something I should check out. And I was like...
Don't say the name of the center, but,
no.
But was it a rehab facility?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so by the time you're coming back from New York, what are you drinking a lot?
Excuse me.
No worries, we'll edit it out. And
okay.
So, were you talking a year, 2 years? You're going from 26, 27.
I am 20. We'll go. I'm 28 right now.
Okay. Yeah. So this wasn't long ago.
No.
And so you're really falling in more to a depression and kind of using a little more than you should kind of thing.
Yeah. It was just, the drinking, I couldn't, change from, college to adult because everybody else around me was drinking too. The friends that I had after college were still, my friends, and we would hang out, meet up for happy hour and those sorts of things, which I miss. But things just got out of control. And so I remember I met up with my mom and my sister for lunch after my therapist had gave me this flyer. And I let them look at it. And I was like, will you guys come with me if I go check it out? And they're like, sure. So I go to check it out, and sure as shit, they interview me. And remember, I have no idea that there is anything wrong with me. I am in cloud fuck. What is going on? Like, really? Why is everybody treating me like this? Why am I not being treated like a freaking adult? And so I went and...
They did like an intervention.
Pretty much.
And I am not a fan of interventions. It's like, hey, we're all here because we love you. Now get the fuck away from us.
It was better than a sit down.
Mafia reference? You just referenced the mob. Funny. I love it. But you're right, though.
Yeah. So, hold on.
I'm not a fan of interventions, if anyone ever asked me. They can be helpful if done right and necessary if in dire straits you're laying there with needles in your arm or some shit, or, you're drinking yourself to the hospital, okay. But I think if you're going to gather all the people that you love and that love you and they mm-hmm. want to show you that, I think the end result shouldn't be a clapping of sending them away from you. My idea is like, hey, we're all here because we love you. What can we do here as a family and ones that love you to help you and not mail you out to be someone else's professional problem?
It's not even to be a professional's problem. It's to figure out what in the hell is going on. What is wrong with her? Because as you described it, they really did treat me as though I had needles in my arm and I was just on the brinking point of death.
How bad was it?
I mean, I was 80 pounds.
Yeah, dude, that's pretty bad.
I quit eating. Like, I didn't want to. I had no motivation.
Well, maybe they were right then.
Well, I mean, but there were no needles. So.
Well, alcohol's bad as fuck. You know that.
Well, but, oh, of course. Of course. Number one drug. That's number one death drug killer.
And other than benzodiazepines, really the only one you can die detoxing from.
I'm not sure what that is, but I'll get back to you. But, you know, so I go to this facility, they sit down with both my mother, my sister, and me, and, you know, they ask questions.
Who?
The individuals at the facility.
Right, but what were their credentials? Were they doctors?
I have no idea what that
was. See, this is important, and when I talk about, when I yell about how these treatments fuck people up,
mm-hmm.
people sit down, and you have to see the doctor within 72 hours. So your check-in and your admission
mm-hmm.
is generally done by somebody that has a high school or, I mean, a college education, a four-year degree in something, right? And they're generally young, you know, people just out of school.
Younger guy.
Were they younger guy? See?
The younger guy.
And so he's got a four-year degree, if that, because there were some working at facilities I had that had a high school diploma. And their job is to call you, take the phone call, talk you in. Then they go into a little meeting, right? And mm-hmm. so they sat with you. So you got this young kid who's now going to take your notes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Proceed.
So, you know, he asked questions to the three of us, and then he asked my sister and my mom to leave. And then he went deeper into questioning, and I was like, okay, I answered whatever. I'm like, God, this is bullshit, you know, what is going on? And he leaves, and he's like, I'll be right back. And I'm like, okay. My mom and my sister come back in, and he comes back in and tells me they recommend that I stay and that if I asked them, okay, well, can I go home and get some stuff? And they said, no, if you leave, you can't come back. You have to come now. And I was like, okay.
Let me ask, how long was the initial interview?
30 minutes.
So in 30 minutes, they were able to get a complete family history and background on you with someone with a high school education who has the idea to now go give his non-professional and trained opinion to a boss administrator that says, yeah, I think she qualifies to admit her.
Mm-hmm.
Then he goes, well, does she have insurance?
I did. However, the way I look at it is, they have specific questions and specific traits and activities or, you know, things that they evaluate people. And I don't think any of the questions, I didn't think it mattered. I think they were just testing how I was responding, how I looked, how things were going. I don't think in any way they were trying to make any real evaluation whatsoever. I did see a doctor the next day that I checked in. But... He was a gator.
Oh, no. So you didn't leave then, so you decided to check in right then.
I was like, all right, I'll stay, sure, whatever.
And then comes the police search.
No. I didn't have anything, so...
No bag? They didn't give you a full search?
No.
That sounds safe.
All I had was my purse, and they took my purse.
Right, but they didn't check you at all.
Well, I mean, he didn't touch me, feel me, like... Yeah. I mean, no.
Now, imagine you're a heroin addict mm-hmm. for 20 years, and you're coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Or I want to sell drugs to people,
mm-hmm.
and all I got to do is get into the place, which they'll take me as long as I get insurance.
It's not that easy.
Right? But sneaking in, my point is, one, it doesn't seem very safe the way they took you in.
Mm-hmm.
So you even said it. You said more like they were qualifying you.
I think it was an evaluation where they were looking for specific responses to things that would trigger, you know what, she's got a potential or concern for this. We may need to look out for that, you know, different things to that nature. That's why I don't think the questions mattered. But once I checked in, I was pissed off. So I sat there and there's one girl who introduced herself to me, and, you know, we started talking a little bit. So I made a friend, and my ex had to drive over from Tampa and bring me clothes, which at that point they searched my entire bag and took the shoestrings out of my tennis shoes.
Yeah, and do that for suicide watch.
Well, the first night I was there, I slept with my door open, and because they have not security, but like people who watch and keep an eye on everybody.
Mental health techs, MHTs.
Sure.
Yep.
So they
wearing scrubs?
Yeah, I mean khakis and a polo.
Yeah.
But anyways, she sat outside my door all night. I would get up. I only knew it because I got up to go to the bathroom, and I saw her sitting out there, and she stood up, and she watched me. She was like, hey, I'm out here, whatever, and she watched me and waited for me to go to the bathroom and come back.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very much cautious. I was on suicide watch.
Yeah, they put you on, that's called a one-to-one.
Yeah. So.
Sorry for all the fucked up terminology. It's just what rings through my head. I was a practitioner. I was a clinical therapist in these places, so I can picture like what you're being processed technically.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and it was annoying the shit out of me. Like I was so annoyed.
And at any time, did it truly feel like somebody was going, "Hey, how are you doing?"
No.
Yeah, it took qualifier, brand her, prep her, send her into the hole, watch the new cattle.
So the next morning, everybody wakes up early and we get in line for our medication.
That's some scary, weird shit, isn't it?
Yes. I was like, what in the hell is going on? Everybody's in their pajamas, half asleep. The TV's on. And they're just handing out, you know, your little cups of pills to take. And you have no idea what they are. No idea. You don't know why they're giving you. You haven't seen a doctor yet. They just give it to you. And I was like, okay.
That's right out of, like, V for Vendetta. Or some creepy fucking movie, you know, when they were doing testing in V for Vendetta. Remember, they would line them up in their damn gown, get the next pills. That's some creepy shit, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Don't scare me.
No, honey, I'll put it out there. I was in patient once before. At about 22 years old. And so I've seen it from both ends. I've been processed myself, and I've been on the other side doing the assessment.
Good cop, bad cop.
Oh, man. You started talking with the TV on and the light, and it's always painted some ugly, like, green or beige or, like, blue.
Blue. I was going to say, it was like everything was blue and beige. And you only got, like, you had to stand in line for the phone. You only got, like, an hour of phone time. You only got the TV on till, like, you know, 9.
Yeah, we allowed 15 minutes on the phone.
Yeah, it was quick. It was quick. And,
So much for the support group that loved you so much. You can talk to them for 15 minutes. Your love support group now has been surrounded by 95 other people going through some serious fucking shit. And maybe the environment won't actually have an effect on the person who's going through the same thing.
Oh, it gets even better. I mean, shit. There were heroin addicts there. There were alcoholics there. There were cocaine addicts.
People trying to avoid prison.
Pretty much, you know.
Some people.
You make friends, you talk about weed enough, fuck, man, everybody knows somebody. So I made friends in rehab.
And how many rehab romances did you see?
I was still in a whole nother world. I was still fucking pissed off at my mom for some reason, I don't remember. But I, you know, she just wouldn't understand me at all. I'm sitting here arguing, saying, no, I don't have an eating disorder. No, there's nothing wrong with me. No.
But you're 80 pounds.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing, though. I don't, you know, I had no idea. It was not occurring to me.
But that's good, though, that the family pulled you up then at that time.
Definitely. Definitely. I wasn't going in the right direction, that's for sure.
Well, that's the thing. I like the idea. Like I said, I like the idea and the initial essence of an intervention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it almost has the same effect of court-ordered counseling. You know what I mean? It's either go sit in this jailed box or force you to go talk about things that you don't talk about or want to work out. And as a therapist, you're going to sit in front of somebody and go, look, you don't want to fucking be here. I know you're just avoiding the bars. How you doing, forced counseling? I mean, it's such a fucking joke.
It really is. The best part is how they make you do, like, meditations, and we have gym time where we have to go walk circles around the gym or play, you know.
And the sad part is, see, some people are listening and going, well, that's good, right? They're active. But what they don't see is how creepy the, like, back porches of these places look where they play games like keep the beach ball in the air.
Yeah.
And you're a grown-up.
Yeah. The whole time I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Why am I here? No idea.
No one has explained the process to you. You've been processed, and now you're in this box, shoveled in a line, getting little ketchup containers filled with pills.
Yep. And, you know, we'd have lunchtime, and they had a pretty good setup for food.
Yeah, they take
buffet.
They take a decent little nutritional aspect.
Yeah.
Some do.
Yeah.
Some.
But, yeah.
Some, it's like, you gonna eat that cornbread?
There's fantastic desserts.
You know what? That should be the tagline of the rehab center. You know, the one that I work for? Not to point them out, but I'm not going to say their name. But if you happen to find a website or whatever, they probably changed it by now. They used to have horses on it. Like, you could ride horses there and play tennis. Well, the tennis court had been rusted and locked and was a jungle.
Oh, man.
The horses, are you kidding? Maybe you rode one of the damn possums that ran through there, or a raccoon, but, I mean, but that's how it sold as this, we have great desserts.
It wasn't terrible.
The desserts. So I'm sorry, for me it gets so vivid, you know, so you're back there with it, and everything's got this yellow tint to it because of the fluorescent shitty lighting.
Again, it was a dark time. I spent there, like, 2 weeks there. And,
oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, was very upset. There was no individual therapy time. You're assigned a therapist. And the one chick I was assigned to, what a bitch. She in no way, shape, or form thought I had a brain and thought I had, you know, a drug problem like all the other people that were there. That's how she treated me. You know, and my mom came for a counseling session, and, you know, she was just not listening to me at all and just siding with my mom completely, you know, not even trying to reason with me as to why she is siding with my mother, you know. So, again, still have no idea what the hell is going on. So I get released, and then you have post-rehab, which, by the way, I was a fan. I was a... crowd or fan favorite, I should say.
Yeah. When you do the whole unit meeting.
Oh, yeah. We have the circles, and you know.
I used to joke that sometimes the community hall looked like a summer camp because they would have arts and crafts time.
Yeah.
And they would bead and do, like, their handprints and shit. But what was bad, though, is there would be handprints and artwork, and then people would come back to rehab for, like, their third time that year. And be like, oh, look, my hand's still on the wall. Like, coming back to summer camp again.
Oh, my God.
It was like, and you kind of see that, and you're like, what the fuck are we doing here?
And the fact that I met people that had been there before, I was like, so this isn't your first time.
You know what we call them?
What?
Alumni. I shit you not. On the fucking paperwork, it says alumni. When you know how you get assigned a therapist?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would show up in the morning. They would pass out my roster, and I'd have my patient list. And literally, it would say new patient, alumni. They track these people as alumni, dude. That's you want to talk about process plant?
Man.
So continue. So you still don't know what's going
people.
On.
Yeah, so I still don't know what's going on. And I end up going to the family doctor who orders an MRI. And I'm like, okay, what's that? I go to get this MRI done. I look at it. I have to go sit in this machine. And then they told me they're going to inject me with some sort of coloring. I mean, it was really okay, what's the coloring for, you know? And they're like, oh, it's just a different vision on the
Is that milky flavored shit?
I don't know. It was an injection.
Oh, fuck. They went on. Okay.
Oh, yeah. They inject me in my arm with some stuff that electrifies in the picture.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, I did that, got the results back. It said that patient shows significant signs and lesions to the brain.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and they said, you know, she is a, she has multiple sclerosis. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? I'd never heard of it before, ever. And, you know, of course, you know, I get fucking diagnosed with the one disease there's no cure for. I've never heard about it. And, you know, they have little support groups and it's some bullshit. But immediately they put me on steroids and sent me to a neurologist and put me on a 5-day steroid drip. So I had an IV in my arm that was like permanent for a week. And she would just come and screw on the IV the juice once a day.
I gotta say, was this the family doctor or was it a doctor in the facility?
My neurologist. My family doctor had referred me to a neurologist once we got the.
So this is 2 weeks after rehab.
Yes.
All right. So you go through this 2 weeks. It's normally 30 days. So you left early then.
Yes.
Okay. Holy shit, though, but you're sitting there 2 weeks after going through fucking hella rehab. God knows what that's like for everyone out there listening that's experienced government-funded Medicare rehabs and dual diagnosis. You know the torture of 2 weeks and that experience can be. And then to walk out of that, and it's hard not to, fuck it. Thank God your doctor was smart enough to do that and find that route. And it's a shame that, you know, rehab couldn't catch that.
Well, the thing was, I mean, once I got out of rehab, I was continuously more and more frail, and that's when I began falling and losing my ability to walk completely.
So could this have explained the 80 pounds?
No, this is why they thought I was anorexic.
Okay, this explained them thinking you had an eating disorder.
Yes.
So it goes automatically to a judgment of personal character.
Correct.
Then the empathy.
Oh, my God. I would be walking into a movie and, like, climbing over chairs and, like, collapse. And, you know, I'd get picked up and have to, you know, walk over to a chair and have no idea why in the hell that happened.
So people were correlating this to you being drunk.
Pretty much.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So it's not like you had a drinking problem.
No. God, no.
Holy fucking shit. So the whole idea is you're trying to say you had your fun like the rest of us in college. And then so from a few experiences and then some life trials like leaving New York and job issues and the fact your gait is now being kind of looks like someone that's intoxicated, people automatically start going, she has an alcohol problem and take you to fucking rehab and drop you off at the door.
Yeah.
This is what the intervention did for you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it doesn't...
Holy shit, you weren't even an alcoholic. None of this was even happening.
Nobody was listening to me.
So the interview person who interviewed you qualified you as an alcoholic.
He didn't qualify me. They had to evaluate me.
But see, here's the tricky part. This is what I always ask. A facility like that, before they can intake you, they have to qualify you for insurance coverage, right?
Right.
So in order to get you to qualify, you have to fit under a diagnosis for admittance. They have to have a reason to accept you. And so the reason he leaves the room is so he can try to get an upper person to okay his diagnosis, his assessment, who I'm telling you has a 4-year degree at best. Does your assessment gives his response to probably an administrator who probably isn't licensed anymore, trained in it but not licensed, double checks it with the accounting office, runs the Medicare card or the Blue Cross Blue Shield card.
I was on my ex's, thank God he put me on his insurance as a domestic partner before this all started.
All right. So you had private insurance.
Yeah.
And here's the fucking crazy part what people don't understand is in the same facility, right? That's mm-hmm. where it's Medicare funding that way. In the same facility on a different wing is the private insurance people. These are the upperties, right? They get their cell phones, right? They could hang out a little more, wasn't so locked down, at least at this facility, right? But here was the fucking catch.
Right.
If you had a therapist or a counselor on mm-hmm. a private insurance side,
mm-hmm.
you are not required to have a master's degree in any type of mental health counseling or social work. You can have a 4-year degree in marketing, and you could be a counselor for Blue Cross Blue Shield, taking all of these big insurance companies that have rehab coverage at mm-hmm. these facilities. That's who's doing your group therapy.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that work in those jobs now, you know. People I went to school with are now evaluating stuff, and I'm like, dude, man, you used to get so drunk on game day.
So this person who's not, you know, and I'm not saying that this is all facilities, right? I'm pointing out the majority of Medicare funded. So this person does this bullshit assessment mm-hmm. when they're not even an alcoholic.
No.
Your own family wouldn't listen because they're only judging by their, you know, and I'm going to give it up to them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Our society pushes the idea that interventions are good. The show Intervention makes them a fucking hero for agreeing to go into the death trap of chemical incarceration.
I wish I would have had the opportunity to go on the show, Intervention show. Oh, my God, I'd be such a trip.
You're already a trip. And the funny thing is you wouldn't even be drinking.
No. I wouldn't even be craving alcohol or anything.
And you could lead them on, right? You know what I love? Everybody's so happy that they go to intervention at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And as a therapist, I sit at the end, I'm like, no, don't go. Family, you guys love them, support them, take them to a good local doctor. Please avoid the medication right mm-hmm. up front. Get a full-on assessment of blood work, genetics, math, and thank God your family doctor went right to an MRI and did that.
Bless him. He passed away. Dr. Paul Schmidt, he's an amazing, amazing family doctor.
Awesome, Dr. Schmidt, because they exist out there, people. Because really, an MRI is the only real way, right, to test for MS.
Yeah, they have to identify the lesions to the brain. And by lesions, I'm referring to is scar tissue. And that occurs when the nerves in your body are trying to, fire to get you to do actions, but it's misfiring. And so it misfires so much that it kills the tissue in the brain. And that's why MS is so different for so many different people, because they are all you find them at any point in the disease and how far the damage has begun. Like at the beginning, obviously there's a slight damage. The longer you wait, the more you get. Well, because I had avoided it as long as I had, I had severe damage.
So early intervention then is key.
Yes.
But the problem is, right, because the only true way to technically diagnose this, because most doctors don't go right to the MRI, is you can only technically do a differential diagnosis. You try different things, but the symptoms of MS mimic so many different disorders and diseases. Hell, they confused you for being an alcoholic.
Oh, my God. There's so many different. I have tremors. Look.
Right.
My left hand shakes. Completely. I cannot hold it still. That is because I have more damage to the right side of my brain.
Well, right. One of the effects of MS is one of the sides of your body usually goes paralyzed, or you forget, you can't use it as properly or something, or it's misfiring. But it's only one side of the body generally, right?
I'm not really sure exactly specifically how it works, because doctors aren't sure either.
Right, right. It's very up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of people experienced the diagnosis as I did. I mean, a lot of people have something where their vision goes out. And
right.
They
get double vision sometimes?
Well, no, their vision goes, I'm told it goes white. It goes blank. It's just a big flash of blank, you know, white.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's like a painful loss of vision.
Yes.
And it's usually one side, and
yes.
It can come and go, right?
Yes, and it actually occurred to a family friend of ours. She didn't know she had anything, and she's driving. All of a sudden, her eyes, she couldn't see anything, and she slammed into a bunch of cars and got into a serious accident. So now not only did they find out she has MS, but she's, you know, in a wheelchair for, you know.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Because of the car accident.
Yeah.
Because it just shows up, and it's really more prevalent, actually, right, in white women, mm-hmm. what, about 25 to 40, something like that?
Yeah, yeah. Between 20, yeah, 25 and 40. I was diagnosed when I was 2009 in the fall. After all that, after everything, you know, I'm still trying to shake off, you know, what I had been through with my family. My boyfriend at the time had a job opportunity up in Virginia Beach, and he was going to move, and he said he would take me with him, and I was like, hell yeah, so I went. And, you know, he worked, and I stayed at home all day. You know, I tried to get, you know, different jobs. I bounced around different temp jobs. It just, I don't know, it was hard to maintain a job. I mean, I would get into fights with coworkers because, you know, they would show me how to do something and I would start doing it and have a question and they would think I wasn't listening. You know, there was a lot of that type of discrimination that I experienced, and they just didn't take any consideration.
I mean, that's what makes those type of months, I mean, about awareness, right, about understanding MS, you know, for families out there, you know, don't just necessarily listen and think they're alcoholics or gay, you know, just because of some simple things, but that's part of the difficult part about this, though, right, is so many symptoms mimic so many things, and really an MRI is about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can do a spinal tap, right, but that's not very accurate.
I did have a spinal tap.
Fuck.
That shit. The next day after the spinal tap, very slowly, the pain started to increase, very slowly, to the point where it hurt. I actually, in the afternoon when my stepfather came home from work, I asked him to take me to the emergency room. It hurt so bad. And the thing about the emergency room is I get there, right, and of course the doctor is like, wait a minute, he's so cute. And he, you know, they put, you know, IVs and start giving me fluids or whatever, and then they're like, all right, we're going to give her morphine. So they holler at this woman who shows up with the shot to add the morphine to the IV, you know, and she would walk away, and still, we don't know why I'm in all this pain. We're just treating the pain now with the morphine. And, you know, I would push a button. When the pain started coming back, I would push a button. And this gets even better. So she would come and give me more, whatever. So they find out, they finally get a hold of the doctor that did the spinal tap, who's like, you know, I'll see her tomorrow. I'll go ahead and do a blood patch. You know, we'll fix it. Just write her a prescription for something for the pain. So I get a prescription for oxycodone with a refill.
Uh-oh.
So...
And without any pre-counseling of the warnings of possible prescription addiction.
No.
They just hand you one of the most lethal and addictive drugs on the planet.
Yes.
Hey, look, I know you've just been accused of being an alcoholic by everyone that loves you, okay? I know your world is falling apart. I know you can't keep a job. And you've been diagnosed with something you don't fucking get because we barely get it in the professional world anyway. I know it seems kind of bleak, but hey, here's this.
Take these. So I only took, I think, maybe one or two, and I was like, holy shit, this is fucking, no. I knew. I was like, no,
no. It's too good.
Yeah, no.
Something can't be that good, that's okay.
Exactly. I knew why people were addicted to it, and I was like, I'm not even going to try, you know, because.
That's wrong with you, shit.
Well, shit, I was in so much pain after that. I think I have, you know, that might be why I have so much continuous severe pain in my lower back. I mean, I have excruciating pain between, when I see doctors and they ask me between 1 and 10, I'm between a 7 and a 10 always.
And that's a realness, too, because a lot of people you can do that test with, right, and, you know, ask them what kind of pain you're in.
Mm-hmm.
What I used to do in group was, hey, what kind of pain are you in? They're like, oh, you know, my leg's so bad. I said, what is it, 1 to 10? They're like, oh, it's a 9 or a 10. And I'm like, all right, so let's say... your arm just got chopped off. What kind of pain would that be in? He's like 15. I said, no, it's 1 to 10. And he's like, that'd be a 10. I said, so it feels like your arm's chopped off right now. All right, so I'm more like a 5 or a 6, right? And just a reframe. So when you're framing, though, a 7 to 10 and a consistent like that,
mm-hmm.
that's excruciating fucking pain.
I've learned to live through it because it's not going to go away. I've done spinal tap, or not spinal taps, what are they called? Epidural shots.
Yeah.
I did that a couple times. Those hurt like hell. Don't last very long. I did different physical therapy. I mean, you name it. Everything but pain pills. And the crazy thing is that, yeah, I smoked a little pot in college. But when my girlfriend was like, have you ever tried smoking to see if it'll do anything for you? And I was like, I don't know. And she was like, here, try it. I took two hits and I was like, holy shit. My life is going to be different now.
I love that shit.
Well, what sucks is that, you know, it's not easily accessible. It's never the same. You know, I don't get the same treatment, you know, or relief as I did that one time. You know, every time I get some, I don't know where it came from. I don't know what kind specifically it is, but I'm gonna smoke it until I start to feel better. And that's just, you know, that's how I live my life, unfortunately. You know, I have
to... Because of Florida.
Yeah, because the laws are restricting, you know, those of us who have severe diseases and, you know, different illnesses, when they don't let us, you know, get something that's consistent and safe, has been, you know, treated, and it's going to fix the one thing, you know, one or two things, they can't even, you know, why can't they get that to me?
Right. And in California, there's weed professionals, I know one personally, that could lay in front of you and go, this would do exactly what it is you need to do,
mm-hmm.
and be able to guarantee that strain to you on a consistent basis.
Right. Not to get high, people. Not to get high. I need relief. And we need to be clear on that. Because there is no way, shape, or form that even though I'm smoking nonstop today, because it's not legal and I don't know, you know, what I'm getting, and I'm not getting enough relief, which reminds me here, let me pack another. You know, I have to. I forgot where I was going.
No, you were talking
about getting high.
No, it wasn't about getting high. It was about the pain and the smoking consistently.
Yeah, I have to smoke. And you know how much money I spend on pot? It's disgusting.
You know how much you'd be spending if it was synthetic drugs? Triple that.
But insurance helps.
Yeah, for a while.
Yeah, for the most part.
For a while, until they get tired of paying for it somehow, or the drugs stop working like they typically do.
Which... weed does that, you know, as well, but that's because it's not prescribed to treat what I need, you know. So, yeah, it stops working, you know, so I have to pack another bowl and keep going, you know.
And the change of strain also helps increase the consistency. Now, I love, because you made such a contrast, and what people don't understand is, if those of you that are unfamiliar with marijuana listening to this and hear about the type of pain she's been talking about, and the consistent packing of a little bowl of marijuana that provides relief, as opposed to taking the first line of defense they handed her, which has wound people up dead in a life of what I call chemical incarceration, now incarcerated by the chemicals that they're handed out in those little pill forms for the rest of their life, in and out of rehab after rehab after rehab,
mm-hmm.
which eventually could have caught you within those 2 weeks of being there, popping those pills. I mean, let's say it wasn't MS and it was other things they were giving you. Next thing you know, you're hooked to something for the rest of your fucking life. Now, these are synthetic. These are man-made, et cetera. They do kill people, but as long as they don't kill enough of them, they can actually put the drug out there. And then you can enjoy that wonderful sound.
Good. I'm hungry. Can we take a break?
Hey, bring some food in here.
We'll order some pizza.
Oh, now you're being
some donuts.
Oh.
You got some cookie dough?
Right. But that's such a huge separation, right? Because you talk about it. It's not about smoking it to get high, right? I mean, I love, because people can't see your nonverbal when you say that.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the playfulness of which you're playing into the idea of smoking and.
Yeah, right. I'm just joking around, you know.
Right.
I'm not in any way. Do I appear to you? Am I behaving as though I'm like, hey guys, like, can we eat something? I'm like so fucking high.
Right. But I love the joking how you were kind of playing into that,
yeah.
With the answer with the cookies and pizza. See, people can't see you, but I see your nonverbal. You're just fucking around.
Goddamn right. I mean, people don't understand, and they take it the wrong way. And it's annoying as shit. And that's why I'm an activist. You know, I am trying to educate people to get them to understand that this stuff is grown in God's green earth. It is a plant, a green plant, all natural earth, all natural, absolutely zero directly related overdoses. Yes, there was some kid, you know, I think up in Jacksonville one spring break who, like, fell off a balcony and he was high, but you know what? He was drunk, too. You know, so, I mean, that's, you're not going to tell me that because he was high he did it. He was fucking drinking a whole lot to even get him on that balcony.
Yeah, and rest in peace for that one, man.
Yes.
And that's part of that propaganda that's pushed down upon people, you know, outside of that generation. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they perceive it as that. They see it as gateway drugs. They see it as, I mean, that was a whole part of the idea of pushing that, you know?
Yeah. You know, and it's just like, it just gets frustrating. It gets really frustrating because people don't understand, you know, and they, oh yeah, you're just going to sit around, smoke pot all day and not do anything and you don't want to work and, you know, you're lazy. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck you. Seriously.
They have no idea experiencing MS is like.
No.
And you're not, though. But you're out there. You're an activist doing your thing here in Florida.
And the only reason I'm an activist for marijuana is because I know it provides relief for me. You know, I don't want to be addicted to pain-killing drugs. I don't want to, you know, crush up and snort that shit. That's not my thing. You know, I'm not that kind of drug user. You know, I'm not trying to get high and act stupid. I am trying to get relief and function in society. You know, I need to function. And unfortunately, the MS, yeah, so it holds me back. It gets me sometimes. Yeah, I have, you know, I get some short-term memory loss. And
yeah, for those of you that don't understand some of those things you're talking about, you know, that you're saying with MS that people don't get, you know, it's not the marijuana that you may be listening to going, see, her short-term memory's fucked up. And that's just part of MS, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of the
damage. Symptom of MS. It's part of, I have brain damage. You know, so it
you
has.
You could be a comedian. People can't see your face and the way you lean into it, the way you say it. I mean, that's a performance joke right there. That's a good bit.
You're so sweet.
It's funny, though. it is because, look, you're sitting here smiling about an idea that most people become devastated at. I mean, I counsel these people in these facilities that, you know, did have some debilitating diagnosis, and they had no other ways of coping with what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Or they did take the bottle of Vicodin that day, and then 10 years down the fucking road, their wife's left, their kids hate them, they don't know why, you know. And those are the devastating effects of taking those pills long term.
Yeah, and guess what? Now we're on welfare. Who's paying for that?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's where it goes. And it's that synthetic big pharma push, man. You know, it's a magic pill society trapped in that notion. What is it? 1 in 2 people in the United States takes a prescription drug every day.
I believe that.
That is fucking nuts. Marijuana could technically replace the top 5 fucking drugs sold.
Exactly. So what we're saying is it's okay to take away all of these, you know, chemical type of drugs and, you know, replace it with something that is, again, grown in God's green earth from the planet. It's been there forever, thousands of years. You can go back 10,000 years to the, you know, ancient Chinese. You know, they use it for treatment all the time. The only reason it's even illegal, the only reason is because after Prohibition, the alcohol companies they needed to expand, and so they got all up in Congress and got them to go ahead and push marijuana away because it was such a competition for them.
Yeah, they pushed away hemp,
mm-hmm.
right? They ended up outlawing hemp.
Cotton
had a lot to do with that, too.
Yeah, cotton as well. These are all big industries that they took away from something they know is way better than theirs.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well,
so,
doesn't that seem to be the practice, right?
Man, victimless society.
Oh, man, we're getting on some, like, Gone into the Wild shit.
Getting deep.
I mean, I got to be honest, right?
Uh-huh.
Part of whatever kind of training it was I had professionally to observe people on some level.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a human. You can observe people. And I've watched you talk now for a while. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you'll talk about a story, and because I get lost in you, I'm like, all right, I'm going through trying to experience it the best I can, right? No one can truly understand what somebody goes through, really. And then I watch you take a dose of the medication,
mm-hmm.
exhale the medication, the first two words maybe stumble, and then you go off on this focused, you know, well-intended, you know, very aimed story without memory lapse of any kind. And I'm noticing that. And what's cool is it's a podcast, so people can test me on this shit and listen back on it.
Cool.
You can listen on yourself because
cool.
you'll definitely hear the bubbler going.
Oh,
and you'll even say, well, hold on, why I hit this? And then you'll get the two inhales, the exhale. I'll drop a word, and then off you go. And it really seems to do a focus. I mean, they use marijuana for ADHD treatment.
Oh, my God. They use marijuana for some. You know, it's curing cancers in some countries.
It's amazing, right?
It's disgusting that we're missing out on this.
It's disgusting that people are walking around in severe pain. And in the right research, in our right mind, it's starting to come out now. It's starting to get out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the first line is, I mean, here is two refills, so what, you talk 180,
mm-hmm.
what, 750 Vicodins?
No, oxycodone.
Oh, oxycodone, Jesus.
Yeah.
Fuck, you said that, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So here's 180 cancer patient drugs.
Yes.
And try not to snort them, get addicted to them, because you will feel in a wonderful, wonderful place.
Mm.
And then you'll need to go there again and again and again and again.
I do have to, you know what's crazy is I have to do that now, but I have to do it with pot because I don't have any consistency.
Mm. And I don't want to talk about, because I know what it's like going through trying to get pot in,
mm-hmm.
in Florida.
Yeah.
So we won't cover those bases. So, you know, I got a woman who is striving in life, pushing mm-hmm. past things. I also love how you just breeze by for a moment the fact that, yeah, MS is challenging. You know, it can fuck with you. You know, and then you just keep moving past it. That's warrior-esque, right? You don't see that challenge, right? It's kind of more...
It's not going to take me down. It's not going to take me down. You know, what's fucking crazy as all hell is, growing up, I always wanted to be an activist. Or, I'm sorry, a lobbyist. I thought, you know, I could go and change laws and go and schmooze and get people to, you know, listen. And I was like, but you know what? I need a cause. You know, I don't have a cause. And lo and fucking behold, God gives me one. And not only does he give me an incurable one, but he gives me something that'll fix it. So
now you're a voice for those. That's the activist part of you now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that choice. I mean, you're almost a fucking stormtrooper. I mean, shit, lobbyist is in line to be working with the emperor himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars reference, big time. You like that?
Yeah, okay. Throw that.
And then instead, you feel the force. I'm going to continue with this long fucking thing.
Shit. No, I am really hungry, so go ahead and finish.
You know what? We can get some food in here.
Mm.
Yeah?
Mm.
We got. If we only had a device to which we can make food appear. Can they 3D print that shit yet?
Justin.
No, man. What if we could 3D print food? Well, they kind of do it already with that genetic modified shit, right?
They're called chicken nuggets.
It's called chicken nuggets. That's true. That's true.
But.
Well, now, right? I mean, McDonald's is going under and... not under. They're going down, right? Monsanto's going down. Yeah, going under is pretty strong, right? Because Monsanto in 2010 did buy Blackwater, in case nobody knows that.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
No one does most of the time. Yeah, let's go eat something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go eat something.
When they show up, we used to hang out a little bit. You know, we call it the green room, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, and we end up hanging out, you know, sometimes with the kids. But anyway, we hang out for a while, have a few drinks, we come in. And then when you're walking in that lighthearted mood of hanging out, and then you walk into, like, this kind of cool environment. It's like, you know.
At least
that's what they're telling me.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, oh, yeah. My universe.
Yeah.
Actually, the multiverse. I refer to it because I know there's just one universe.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we know, like, multiverses exist.
There's a lot of balls in there. I can see that.
Oh.
Here. It's pink.
Never trust the person that doesn't bring their own lighter to the table.
Amen.
I made that shit up. Is that real?
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say never trust. Oh, nicely rolled.
Thank you. As Doc Holliday would say, if we were in Tombstone. Proceed, though.
Mm.
Well, proceed, ma'am.
Where was I?
We talked about some of those times that you were going through, you know, directly. Yeah, wiggle that shit around however you want. It moves down, up and around, all kinds of shit.
I'm trying to fix.
Yeah, wherever you need it.
Good?
Yeah, you project well, too. When you start talking, you're good.
I know. I talk too much and too loud.
Hiss, boo, hiss, because I run my mouth like a crazy person so much to where I had to start a podcast so my wife wouldn't leave me. No, I'm kidding. That could be a cool, like, one of those things they have to debunk. But, no, I mean, I'm one of those people like you. I talk a lot.
Mm, yeah. I have a lot to say. I have a lot to say here. Pass that.
I'm asking it for you.
Yeah, give me a minute and I'll tell you some more shit.
No, well, no, but I think it's true, man. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know people are different. What do they call them? Introverts, extroverts, et cetera. But I like the idea of the social connection, you know, talking to somebody. You know, when people do come into the cave and I can sit down with them like this, you know, we sit for an hour or two sometimes, you know, and we go. And to walk down into their lives is really what I'm trying to do. You know, to be honest, is I think humans are the most fascinating fucking species here. And they're people and they're individualists. So when you can sit down and talk to them, you know, you almost get to experience somebody else's perception of life, you know, and because there's so many individual perceptions. And I don't know, there is that theme of the people that have sat in that chair as well, of this warrior-esque to them. You know, I would tell you every person that's come on this podcast and sat in that chair had an idea of that, you know, the cognitive rampage in them, right? That idea of living enthusiastically despite inevitabilities, but living in the hope of optimism in a way, you know, this drive toward enthusiastic way of life. And you do that. You live that way. You live that cognitive rampage, you know, and it's cool because, like we said in the beginning, you know, we didn't know each other or meet, you know. Essentially, my manager hooked us up. And
okay.
He's called himself that to me since we were stupid little kids. And anyway, so he hooked us up. And since I met you, you've been this direct, open person of enthusiasm, you know, and drive. And we talked already about how, you know, that was your personality already going into you know, this happening to you, if you will. You know, how you breeze over something that was, you know, it's a dark time in your life. You called it that even in our talk about, you know, that dark time of entering those 2 weeks. And you fast-forwarded those 2 weeks, and we went straight to the diagnosis issue after.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to go kind of maybe back to those 2 weeks and kind of live that experience. Maybe people that haven't been through that process, right, that incarceration period type feeling, maybe walk them through what that feels like, and who fucking knows where you and I will go after that.
You know, one thing I'll say is going there, walking in there as somebody that was not directly or didn't think directly they needed to be there or recognized anything needed to be fixed, I distinguished myself separate from them. as in the other patients. And I didn't distinguish myself separate in terms of, like, I'm way better than you. It was more or less like, what the fuck am I doing here with you people?
Ouch.
But the good news is...
But you got to feel that way, because I think we also skipped over, in case people didn't recognize it, that you in no way, shape, or form were an alcoholic by any means.
No.
Or addicted. You had only lost all that weight because of the MS that was undiagnosed.
I quit eating. No appetite.
Because of MS, right? So, and everyone referenced you this as being this alcoholic. For me, that's a fucking nightmare. I mean, think about it. Don't they write an Alfred Hitchcock movie or some shit about that, where you wake up one day, all the people that love you are forcing you into this hospital to go away?
Oh, my God.
And nothing is actually really wrong in that sense, you know? Yeah, medically wrong, but...
Yeah. No, it really was one of those things where here I am, you know, I had made big decisions and you know, graduated from college and had a job and... moved to New York City and didn't make it, but still had that heart that, you know, I'm going to be somebody. I'm going to do something, you know, and to stop for a moment and even think that I wouldn't be able to do those things, it just didn't, unimaginable. You know, it didn't even occur to me that I would ever be in a position to where I would be held back from things. And that's okay, because, you know, I've learned to accept it and understand it and know that it won't be forever, and they're going to fix it, and they will fix it. And if they don't, I'm still going to fight. I'm going to fight every single day. God put me here on this earth for a reason, and I will serve that purpose. I will do that.
And what are the medical approaches to actually taking MS on? Because in a lot of the research that I have, it seems, you know, what do they treat? How do they treat it, right? Because we don't even, like we said before, they don't even fucking know much about it.
Well, and I'm glad you asked me that, Adam, because I skipped over those parts in my story. When I was first put...
I'll fix it.
When I was first put on the steroids, once they realized what was wrong with me, and the steroids, I was the IV drip. I had 5 days, and it gave me an appetite. I was able to move. I had a little bit more energy. And then after that, they decided that they were going to try me on a newer drug. That, and when I say newer, like 3 years, that kind of new.
Okay.
And the name of the drug is called Tysabri. Now, this drug is administered by IV infusion once a month. Okay? When they started me on it, they would give me, which was awesome, a Benadryl drip first. And then I would...
What was that for? Make you drowsy or something?
No, just to...
An allergic reaction in case?
Yeah. I guess. It wasn't explained to me, but I wasn't going to complain about it directly.
Okay.
Hold on. This is my weak hand. So, I would go and get these IV, you know, infusions done, and I did it a couple of times here in Orlando, and when I moved to Virginia Beach, I had to go to the hospital and do it in their infusion centers where the people are getting, like, blood transfusions and all sorts of shit. But the good news is the Benadryl, I fell right to sleep, so it was cool. They'd wake me up and tell me it was over and pull it out, and my boyfriend would pick me up, and that would be it. Now, the thing with this drug, there's a couple of things. But when I would get the IVs for the month, you could feel that it fades. It's not long-lasting. You know, so by the time the next month comes, you need it. You know you need it. You know, all of your symptoms, all of the things that are wrong have been coming back up. So, you know, it would be that. Now, the more they studied the drug.
Sorry.
Okay.
Hold on. The more they studied the drug.
Mm-hmm. The more they studied the drug, they found that it had a Do another one, please.
Oh, shit.
Oh, fudge. You like how sometimes I'm, like, being careful? Oh, sweet, welcome.
Practice, you gotta be in. No.
Okay. Where was I?
We were just getting into some rather deeper, darker shit about the issues with the drugs and the reasons why.
Yes. So, they finally start to do more research, okay? And I move to Virginia Beach, and I get set up with a new neurologist who, the first time I meet him, you know, he's trying to get to know me, kind of try to understand the symptoms I was having a little bit better. And then, you know, we started talking about the treatments I was getting for it, and I had said I was on the Tysabri. And he said, okay, have you ever been tested for the JC virus? And I said, the what? And he's like, the JC virus. He's like, it's not a big deal. It doesn't mean anything. Some people have it, some people don't. I'm like, okay. So we do a blood test or whatever. It comes back, apparently, I have the JC virus. Well, sure as shit, as research came around, it turns out that individuals, and not all, but some who receive the Tysabri infusions along with having the JC virus are at risk for a deadly disease. You die instantly. The insides of your bodies explode. It's called, the short name of it is PML.
Okay.
But the effects of it is deadly. You know, the effects of the drug Tysabri and the JC virus, which really isn't anything at all, is deadly. I have the JC virus. I was immediately taken off of the Tysabri. That was it for me.
Yeah.
We waited about a month, and then my neurologist put me on what it was a 7-day injection of Copaxone. 7 days a week, you inject yourself.
Jesus.
Yeah. And starting on it, oh, my God, it sucked so bad. It itched. It burned. I had welts all over my body. It was just terrible. And, you know, I've since gotten used to it. But, you know, it's just something I had to do every single day. And missing days would, you know, is not good. You know, because I would be all whacked out, you know, until I got it the next day. The good news is science has moved forward, and they've found that they can give the drug, change it, double it up. It was 20 milligrams 7 days a week. They now have it to 40 milligrams 3 days a week. So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I do the injections. Now I have spots all over my body, or mostly my legs and my hips. From the drug, it causes, you know, damage to the tissue when you're poking yourself all the time.
Yeah, right.
You know, so, I mean, that's a lot of plastic surgery I'm going to have to get one day.
And did they tell you about any of these side effects or possibilities?
Not directly. I don't know if you can tell. You can feel it.
Yeah, it's hard to see in a dark light.
Yeah.
Man, so none of this was even told to you.
Mm-mm. I just went with it. You know, I again, completely brain dead to the world. I was like, sure, whatever, give me, fine.
But you just, well, you did what you're told to do. Listen to your doctor, right?
Yep. Oh, shit's not.
Don't worry about it. And so that's the hard part, is because you do what you're supposed to do and do what you're told, and you follow the process, you follow the advice, and found yourself, first you found yourself in 2 fucking weeks of lockdown rehab, and that wasn't even remotely close to the issue. And then you're given this drug to treat this diagnosis you're hit with. You're following the orders, being the good patient. They hand you the drugs, you're doing the treatment. Now you wind up with a J virus or a PML version, or a rare and usually fatal viral disease characterized by progressive damage or inflammatory of the white matter of the brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
Yeah. So, and the white matter would be the scar tissue.
Okay.
So the more scar tissue you have,
the more chance. Oh, wow. And so the injections that are coming from that.
That was the IV infusions monthly, yes. I did that for a year and a half. No idea. No idea I was at risk.
And no one said a fucking thing. Holy shit. Do they still do this right now?
They still offer the drug, yeah. But they test people first for the JC virus. If you type in...
Yeah, look up the JC virus.
Type in Tysabri first. Yeah. Tysabri.
Man, I can't imagine. I mean, this happens daily, too, to people. Misdiagnosed in mental rehabs, misdiagnosed all over the place. You know, the doctors are given 3 minutes to talk to somebody. They're sold a new drug to use, right? They buy into it. They use it. I mean, look, the people doing the research are the drug companies, okay? Mm-hmm. Very few universities are really doing it, you know? So that's the drug there?
Yeah.
You're going to end up getting fucking sued. These motherfuckers got, like, killer lawyers.
Oh, man. That's all right.
Maybe if we just say the word allegedly.
Allegedly.
Well, I mean, but this is your experience.
Yeah, this is what happened to me.
Right.
I'm not here to speak pro or con to any specific drugs or treatments or whatever. I'm speaking about my life.
Right, right. Sure, of course.
You know, what put me where I am now.
That's right.
And I'm not in a bad place. I'm not. You know, but I am in quote-unquote recovery after, you know, 9 years of something that didn't work out.
And that's not recovery addiction for those people listening. That's recovery of...
Well, no, it wasn't from addiction. It was from the mental and verbal abuse that I was dealing with.
Oh.
Yeah.
We skipped that part of the fucking story.
Yeah, well, I don't want to go into the whole research... research.
No.
The whole relationship thing.
Yeah, no, girl, you go where you want to talk.
I don't want to give him any acknowledgement.
No, let's not do that whatsoever.
Yeah.
Dirtbag. Well, we already talked about out front when we were hanging out in the green room, talking about the food that's now here, that we, you know, that the positive lining in it is that you found what you now know what you want.
Yes.
You know, and you're able to sound, you said that today, too, or you said that on the podcast today when you said, you know, I find the silver lining in those things.
Yeah.
You know?
I can see clearly now. My daze is gone. You know, I was in such a daze, and now I can see clear. Now that I'm living at home with my parents, I have the security of being able to go and see, you know, the right doctors. You know, I finally got approved for Medicare. That took over 2 years.
What the fuck? And out of all people at the time that need the assistance, it's not there to give.
Mm-mm.
Jesus.
Yeah. No, it wasn't. There wasn't even like a temporary while you wait. Nothing.
Nothing.
No.
And time matters with this, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're broke. I mean, and there are pills, and I mean, there's just so many different things involved in trying to get help.
Wow. I mean, tell us. Walk us through some of those biggest issues. I would be interested. What was the biggest issue other than the 10 you've already talked about? But from a financial covering issue and getting that worked out, I mean, what?
I was lucky, like I said, because my ex had me on dependent health insurance
right. Before
I was diagnosed. We didn't even know. He just was like, here, I should probably put you on this. For all I knew, by the way, I was under the understanding that we were to be married. And so that's the only reason I sat around for 9 years. I told him I'd give him, a while ago, I told him I'd give him 10 years. He couldn't figure his shit out in 10 years and we weren't married, I'm leaving. Well, in 9 years, he took care of it. But
yeah. But, I mean, either way, but it helped you a lot because we all know the obstacles, you said it, you know, the tough stuff is what makes you stronger. And you've done that. And, you know, leading the kind of an activist level, right, on the MS perspective.
Yes.
Is it about bringing awareness? Is it about bringing money to more research? We started talking about how you treat this. And that treatment that you just went through this drug use that the doctor told you to go do has wound you up now at high level risk for something that you're way too awesome and cool that's going to happen. You're too much of an ass kicker.
You're too sweet.
It's true. And so what else? I mean, since we don't know much, right, about it, even the cognitive tests that they do to even try to, you know, differential diagnose MS
mm-hmm.
is an obstacle. Those are loops. I can only imagine because, well, they usually start with like a blood test, and then they, you said we take it all the way to spinal taps, and finally, but your doctor was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they and caught that on the MRI, but what's the treatment options? I mean,
I wasn't given any options at the time. I was so far deep past, you know, when they should have been starting treatment that they, that's why they put me on this deadly drug right away, because they knew they could stop the progression.
Oh, so they took the high risk.
Yeah. Yeah. Regardless, they, to stop the progression, they jumped on this, which, you know, it stopped it, which is good.
Sure.
You know, and I continued living. I'm not saying that, you know, my life has been perfect and it's all hunky-dory, because depression is something I fight regularly. Anxiety is something I fight daily.
On top of?
In addition.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just something I do. But it's okay. You know, I have, you know, I have the right people on my side to get me where I need to be, and they've been there, and I haven't I don't know if I've given them enough credit, but my mom and my stepdad, they are a blessing to me, because I really wasn't going in the right direction until I moved back home, and since they've been able to provide me with the opportunity, like I said, to go to the doctors, and I also get massages on a weekly basis. I get acupuncture on a weekly basis. You know, those types of things I never would have been able to do on my own. And
these work for you, these extra treatments, they really help.
They help. They get me through. You know, they don't last very long because my pain just pops right up almost instantly. It's not a cure-all. It's more or less of maintaining my relaxation. I can't get too hyped up, I mean, because that makes your symptoms flare. And I have damage to my spine where the myelin was damaged. See, MS, the immune system begins attacking the body, and the myelin on my spine was attacked pretty bad below, lower back.
Because it's usually in one of the three places, or all three, right? It's the spine... And what's the geez.
Brain?
Yeah, spine, brain, and was it the whole portion of the spine, right? The was it upper cerebral part, the upper portion?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. Where I have a very large lesion there as well. Did you roll the other?
No, you began chatting. Did you?
Dude.
Oh, you began chatting. And
this
it
is
took
short.
Me away.
This is short. So.
You began chatting. You took me out there, man.
It's where I go.
No, I mean, but still, to be back home and having that right support is huge, because that's the environmental support, you know. And I kind of wonder, what would have happened from the very beginning, you think, if rather than the two-week rehab, it became this environmental support, right to the family physician, right to the MRI?
Things would have been different. I was stubborn. I was stubborn. I did not want to admit that I had made the mistake of quitting my job, moving, selling everything, moving to New York, not making it, having to come back. They thought I was an alcoholic and an anorexic. Like, you know, I had so much
What a storm.
Yeah. Which is, you know, a lot of things I still fight with. You know, my relationship with my parents wasn't perfect when I moved back home. You know, I've been home almost or a little over a year now, and we've come very far. And they'll tell, and you know, they say it very, you know, they'll say it that I'm a completely different Christina, and they actually say I'm back to the old Christina, the original.
You
know,
what's doing that for you most?
I think the security, you know, of having someone to look out and take care of me and know that, you know, they're not going to leave me and they love me no matter what. And they, you know, there's just so much more.
Yeah.
So much more that they do that I can't, that I, you know, I am so thankful. So thankful. And Hopefully they know. Hopefully they know how much I love them and how thankful I am that they saved my life. I am, you know, I fought with them about moving back home because I was living, So we were in Virginia Beach, and then we moved to Atlanta. My ex got a different job, so we moved to Atlanta, and I was super way excited. Love Atlanta. Love it. And that's where I joined the local normal group and started getting involved in the activism. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the local group you were just talking about?
The what?
You said a local group there in Atlanta.
Oh, Normal.
Okay.
The local Normal, Peachtree Normal group.
Okay, okay.
So I got really involved with them, and things didn't work out with my ex, so I moved out.
What did you do with the activism up there?
Well, I began training a lot of grassroots volunteers. Which is something that's a little difficult to find with this topic. People are scared to say they're okay with marijuana or that they smoke marijuana or that they know anybody. Because it is a federal crime, people are terrified. Nobody speaks up for it, you know? But the thing is that so was alcohol. And they spoke up for that during Prohibition. And when that came up, now we have all the alcohol we can drink and all of the deaths and, you know,
yeah.
There's just so much.
It stays with it. Alcohol's truly the worst one. So on the activist level, you're fighting for legalization.
Yes, I'm fighting for legalization. Now, I have my main legalization concern is medicinal, but I'm not objected to overall, you know, any attention to legalizing it that will help treat me is good.
Right.
Is good, you know, and that's really what I want, you know. And so that's what I'm fighting for, you know. That's why with the grassroots I go and I meet with people and I talk to them and, you know, just give them more information about the drug, how it's used, what it really is, it's a plant, you know, those sorts of things. And then answer questions as to why, you know, they feel it's not something that could be beneficial.
Mm.
You know, and what they're
spreading the education.
Absolutely.
I think you're a perfect representative for that.
Thank you. My acupuncturist is now calling me the poster child for legalization.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, I think the activist voice in itself is enough for it. I mean, the physical, you see it. I mean, the talk, and I see you using it. I know the effects of it. I'm pro-marijuana. I've been pro for it forever.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see decriminalization, not legalization. But, you know, I'm with you, you know, I do. I make the argument a lot online even
mm-hmm.
about decriminalization versus legalization. And people argue with me that, oh, well, there's a process that you got to go through and this is a step to get there. And then I argue, well, we the people, motherfucker,
mm-hmm.
we can just skip the fucking process and decriminalize the whole thing. If I want to grow tomatoes, I grow tomatoes and I eat them. If I want to sell those tomatoes, I got to go the proper route, get licensed, and if I'm lucky, open up a thingy. Well, now they're making sure that doesn't happen. It's a multinational corporation. They want to own the supply. But then I got to be honest, this is my argument. But now I sit and I chat with you up front, you know, because I know it's medicinal purposes and treatments, you know. And it's hard. I'm like you, I guess. It's hard for me to go just fucking anything. You know, if I got to go get a stupid little fucking card to prove it so that they can get their fucking money.
Yeah.
I just worry that the only place we're going to be able to get it then or legally have it is Walmart to pick up a prescription, Publix, and CVS. Because, you know, Marlboro's got a fucking giant factory up by Canada ready to print marijuana cigarettes tomorrow.
They've got the boxes made up already.
It's on.
They are all over it. Philip Morris, all of them.
Right. And so, you know, you look at that and it's kind of like, you know what, you're right. Just fucking get it through. But I worry because if we just worry about pushing to get it through,
mm-hmm.
that's how they get their little fucking greedy hands on it. Is that everybody goes, well, hold on. We can't pass it yet. We got to make sure we got the right state regulations of who can grow it. And then here come your lobbyists. Here come your government influences. Now only giant corporations can grow.
Well, and that's why, and that's more of a national thing.
Sure.
And I'm really focused on the state. I'm baby steps. You know, I want to get it through the state.
Yeah.
I think the states have the right to, you know, make their own decisions. However, I do not think that they have the right to deny.
I would agree.
You know, so I think that in some sense they need to change that or fix that. I don't want to have to move somewhere so I can not have to medicate with, you know, poisonous factory-made chemicals, you know?
I'm with you. That's the sad fucking part. Yeah, he's got the boxes pulled up right here.
Yeah, told you.
Marlboro marijuana box right there. They're ready to go. I mean, I just hate the fact that, you know, corporate's got a hand on it. It'd be hard to wonder what other chemicals they may be wrapping in those Marlboro menthol.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Marlboro menthol.
Marijuana.
Marijuana cigarettes. I don't know.
Just get it to them, right?
Just get
it to them.
Yeah. If anything, you know, start studying it. Let you know, the growers, you know, put it together, mix plants, you know, see what works with what for who. You know, that's what we need to start doing.
The real research on it, putting new up-to-date research on the effects of it.
Yeah. Nothing. Okay, I just want to say that nothing is more annoying than a person who may be, you know, selling, saying that they have, quote-unquote, medicinal. Okay? Medicinal is just a generic term for a variety of different strains of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So telling me that it's medicinal makes me want to fucking kick you in the face. I'm like, are you kidding me? No, I'm not paying an extra fucking $10 because your guy told you it was medicinal. What does it treat? Do you know?
Has anybody ever answered you?
No. sometimes, though, I get to a point where I'm out and I need it and I really just don't care. I'll, you know, whatever. It's medicinal. Okay, sure, whatever. Give it to me.
Well, I mean, pain does that. I mean, pain does people to go shoot heroin. Pain does causes people to drink.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, severe pain. I mean, I think chronic pain in itself is one of the root causes. Trauma, chronic pain, you know, those type of things, are what trigger the symptoms of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think people are too busy about treating the addiction direct on when the usage is symptom. You know, people fucking use. They use things. They use substances. They use activities, right? I mean, it's insane to think about a drug-free society, you know. But this one, right? The natural one would be here if you didn't mow it and cut it.
The safe one, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you think it's still such a surprise anymore to the generation coming up when these wow factors, you know, finally hit them in the fucking face?
I don't know.
Or do you think that cognitive dissonance is so hard that they can't once believe?
I struggle with my mom in her understanding fully.
Yeah, because that's the generation, right? Mm-hmm. They're the Reagan, dare, just say no.
Yes. Drugs are bad. You know, don't share needles. That was the only drug advice PS I got growing up. My mom, don't share needles. When AIDS was a big deal.
Hey, that's some good advice, though.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I've never
used needles.
Shared.
But, you know, they were uneducated, too. I mean, they were forced that propaganda idea all the way back from, you know, when the guys are coming back from Vietnam using. I mean, it goes all the way back. So that idea has seen it. But you're right. Alcohol's been clear and present danger from, you know, from day one. But, I mean, that alcohol, that argument's made, you know, constantly about it. But, you know, with so much research out there, the fact it doesn't change or hasn't changed so briefly, for me, I can only say, look, it hasn't been allowed to change quickly because right now the governments are the ones putting their fucking hands on it. You know, they got to slow everything down so we can hook it all up so we make sure the system runs properly that we now control it.
Correct.
And for me, that's why I always lean toward decriminalization because it links to the prison problem. I think it's like 65% something of federal prisoners are linked to a marijuana charge. It may even be fucking higher. What's your guess?
Well, I mean, shit. And it's a federal crime. And we're talking about overcrowding and prisons and stuff. It's a complete waste.
Yes.
You know?
A waste of resources and still the idea of comparing the notions of what help really is, right?
Exactly.
I mean, so many people fall through that crack. They go through something traumatic in their life, whether it's a medical diagnosis like you,
mm-hmm.
a loss in their family or something, a divorce even, you know, kids' perspective. They go through something traumatic, you know, they act out in a few different ways. What are the options, really? Okay, you got to face the options, didn't you? Here's your 30-day recovery and take these pills and become a machine zombie because we fucked up. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, something actually is medically wrong with you. Wait, come over here and take these injections and be a medical zombie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it could fuck you up and kill you instantly.
Be careful.
Right, but it did help you. So, I mean, thank God that part worked out. But, I mean, that's what you're left to. You're left to no options, and they wind up in jail. And they end up going the legal option way, and they wind up in jail of some kind of, you know, fashion, you know, because that's how they handle it.
It's not fair.
No.
It's bullshit.
And for me, the medical treatment issue is a big deal because insurance or not, I don't think we can compare bottom lines to people's life value. And so, you know, insurance makes trillions of dollars off of people like you being sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so they keep you alive. There's no sense in curing anything. Let's keep you alive as long as we can that you still need our drugs. I mean, do you feel any of that kind of sense in full?
Absolutely.
Oh, shit.
Absolutely. I feel very much, you know, controlled by these companies because they make what I need. And if I don't get it, I'm not well, you know, and I can't even think clearly on that.
Think about the guy who, whatever that, he was big in the news and on social media, he jumped up the price of a medication from $13 to $750.
Yeah.
You know, but when, now you're someone beholden to something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of what you're explaining.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm totally at the mercy of Medicare, that's for sure. You know, which is not fair.
No. No one should be. So my point about the health insurance is how great could it be? And that if you didn't have to have the millions of dollars and you had the best help immediately right away, you know, from all levels, even if, say, you checked in at the rehab place, if this was optimal rehab, they would have sent for an MRI because the doctor who would have admitted you before you got into the hospital may have been smart enough to go, we may need an MRI because she says she doesn't drink. She says it's not happening, right? And he could have seen the symptoms. But so all of this plays in the fucking role.
And the doctor was a gator.
What happens in the difference between, you know, if, you know, before you're admitted to this hospital or that hospital, or, you know, here, take this major synthetic drug that, you know, worked for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the idea is still reaching out and handing you a oxycodone, you know, bin and a refill, if the idea is here's some marijuana that'll help you ease the pain and cope it along the way and help you, you know, stay more active. Because we all know you take an oxycodone, you're not active.
No, I'm dead to the world. I can't work. And that, you know what, if anybody, you know, if they're going to sit there and complain about stoners and people that, you know, hippie stoners that sit on the couch all day and do nothing, that's bullshit. Because the people that are sitting on the couch every day can't get jobs, okay? And those people, if we legalize marijuana in general, will create thousands of jobs, okay? All over the spectrum, okay? So there's no
it helps out everybody.
Yeah, there is no
except Big Pharma.
Exactly. And that's the battle, you know? That is the battle. We are fighting big pharmacies and, you know, a lot of alcohol. You know, what are they called then? NRA? No.
No.
The FDA. You know, there's the three big.
Oh, yeah, Big Pharma, right? Is it, you're talking about the bigs?
No, I'm talking about the big activism focuses. There's guns.
Oh.
Guns, alcohol, and tobacco. What is that?
Oh, DEA.
Yeah.
The Drug Enforcement Agency. Is that what you're talking about?
Drugs, alcohol, and tobacco?
No, you're talking about the NRA. You were right the first time.
No, that's the National Rifle Association. Brother, get your places right.
No, I ain't got no rifles.
TFA? Tobacco?
It is something, right? Okay, you know the movie?
Oh, ATF.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
Yes.
Those weren't the alphabet boys that fucked with me.
I was thinking of the movie, Thank You for Smoking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you know how they all meet and talk about their shit.
True, though. That's, yeah, for anybody, you need to watch that film.
You mean, clips?
Yeah. You know that those are just left around for just in cases.
What?
Paper. Yeah, it's just left around for other sides, but... I mean, you know, we covered a lot about the dark part of your journey. You know, we talked about how, you know, you were misled different ways. We covered these things. You know, what would you tell to somebody or some other, you know, young woman that may not have experienced this yet or maybe on the cusp of experiencing this yet? I mean, that may feel whatever. I mean, I can't understand at all what that may feel like because if it is common, it's in 25 to 40-year-old white females. And it just, like you, it just pops out of fucking nowhere.
Changes your life completely.
What would you tell that young you if they're sitting there feeling however it is it feels?
Don't give up. Don't give up. You were put here for a purpose. You've got a purpose to fill. If you're facing a disease that's incurable and not really studied very much, lacks amounts of treatment options. Stay strong. Do what the doctor says, but also do your research and see that there is a lot more that can be done. And you're not, it's not over. You know, if I had to wake up every morning, if I had to, when I wake up every morning, you know, it's, thank God, it's right, I made it, got another one, you know. And not that I think I'm going to die every day, it's just, you know, I powered through, I didn't give up, I'm not going to give up, I found something to focus on, I got my eye on the ball, and I'm going to get shit done.
And... I hope you will come back here, please, because, you know, we want to continue the fight with you. You know, legalization I'm on the fence about, you know, because I really want decriminalization. But I got to say, talking to you really kind of sways me in a way to where I just say, God, if whatever it fucking takes to get it out there, right? It's hard for me to ignore that argument. You know, you've made that very clear for me, you know, because I start to feel like a stubborn child that's like, no, decriminalization, you know, because I have a hard argument on cursing the same way, right?
Right.
But it's that same notion as maybe I'm being that stubborn child to where I'm more or less like, no, make it open and free and let's run barefoot too at the same time. And, you know, I don't know if I'm crazy to think that that could happen, but I don't know. I know how much it helps, you know, those that are in need of it and use it. So I may or may not sign that petition you brought here for me. That's why I'm bringing this up. I'm using the podcast to break the mold for me.
I'm going to freaking smack you if you don't sign this.
I prepared for this. For you. I knew this was coming. That's why I even brought it up, you know, because I really would prefer decriminalization over legalization.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
You can sign a petition for that, too. They've got a bunch of them floating around.
I got you. But the reality of that, if that happens, it's going to have to come from a federal level, which I've heard may be happening around 2017.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that possibly on a federal level that they may decriminalize it altogether because the evidence linking prisons and incarceration statistics, et cetera, that they may be doing it on their own.
Prison overcrowding, you know, like I said, jobs. There's just so many things that can be relieved, you know, that it can... replace a lot of resources as well. You can make gas out of hemp. You can make, you know,
paper,
concrete,
shirts.
You know, anything.
Yeah.
You know, so you want to put everybody out of business. I mean, maybe that's what everybody's afraid of.
Mm.
you know, the impact, the
change,
the huge impact it's going to have in the change.
Yeah. I mean, the people now that have to fight that propaganda they've been force-fed, you know, about what marijuana is and drugs, sometimes on a general notion, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're fighting, they're having to fight those thoughts of programmed of what it is. And, you know, it's people like you that help those people that do have a common sense and can be humble enough to open themselves up. And I think you really are fighting those that more have that concrete belief about what drugs are from the Say No program, et cetera. And I think that's where you're reaching out to, because I think that's really where the change needs to start. You know, swaying the ones on the fence, they'll sway once it's legal in any sense anyway. But to speed up that process, I think that's what your voice is really standing for, on the forefront of marijuana anyway.
Absolutely. And in terms of, you know, research and studying multiple sclerosis, you know, I think in a sense, I think the legalization could help in those, you know, different types of medications that they're creating. You know, maybe they could add a little bit of cannabis oil, you know, who knows? You know, if it's curing cancer in some places, you know, I can't argue that it can't have other benefits.
Yeah, I want to somebody produce some negative hard evidence, you know, on some rational sense level, you know, but you stand up for that. And, you know, you're speaking out for people, you know, bringing awareness to MS, because look, we've talked about it, our science doesn't know much about it. The symptoms kind of hide themselves and look like a ton of other things.
And change constantly.
And change, see, and so the variations of change, you know, in the symptoms and shit, the system of our medical service is that of almost just a processing plant anyway. So you just get processed. If you're not asking the questions, you're going farther. It's basically wait till you're fucking in it, you know. And so all of those things need to change.
I never knew how fucked up the system was until I got caught in it. That's for sure.
You know what? Some people, I think, go on rants about rampages. But I think statements themselves and one simple quote can be a cognitive rampage. And that speaks a lot. I could see that written on a picket sign somewhere. And for those that are voting against marijuana or the idea about it, remember that. Remember that fucking quote. Because you may be in that system one day. If the tractor beam of you're fucked and no one cares, and look, diseases and other things don't really discriminate. You know, some do and some don't. And you may find yourself in this system. So before you defend and protect the system, and condemn those people that are, you know, using or doing anything like that, they got to really hear the real story.
Cut us some slack. Give us a chance. I'm fully functional right now. I've been smoking all day pretty much. I can go to, you know, I can work if I needed to. You know, I do have limitations, but those limitations are involved with my symptoms. You know, my severe back pain and, you know, my inability to stand for long periods of time, those sorts of things. But I also, at one point, when I lived in Virginia Beach, I worked as a part-time teller at a bank and was top in sales in the district, and I only work like 20, 25 hours a week, you know?
Mm.
I'm fully capable.
Mm.
You know, it's CMS that holds me back. You know, it's those painful symptoms, those difficult things, you know, that are where I can come in today or I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it. And that's the problem.
And marijuana eases that up for you. It also pushes you forward.
Absolutely.
I know. There's so much noise out there in that world right now, legalization, you know, that sometimes adding to it, you know, I feel bad. But a voice like yours kind of parts those voices and kind of goes, are we fucking serious? Are we fucking serious? You know what I mean? Let's not talk about this, you know, the person you impersonated of their idea of a stoner, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I thank you for braving the cave and coming out here and telling your story, even the dark side, and going there, you know, and being vulnerable out here.
Mm. My pleasure.
No, it's been definitely my pleasure hearing about it. And, you know, you're an inspiration to those because you didn't stop living your life even when a lot of things turned on you.
It wasn't easy, but I had the right people around me to keep my chin up and keep me moving. And I wouldn't be here today if I didn't have those people. That's my motivation, you know, and that's where I go, that's where I fight. I am very thankful that you invited me to come on your show.
No, you're the gift. I promise you, you're definitely the gift too. You're the gift to a lot of people out there, you know, that may have just dropped into this. You know, maybe they're experiencing symptoms, you know, they're not unsure or been through something. You know, if somebody hears any of that, you know, that's change, you know, and I love how you pick the policy that affects it on a direct level and also affects those not just with multiple sclerosis. And you pick that to be something active in. And, you know, we support that. And anytime you'll come back on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely want to, you know, stay involved with your fight that you're on because we're kind of angled and net and wedged in there somewhere. So I would definitely love to just, you know, I mean, we're friends now. We're hanging out. You live in the same town. So, I mean, this is an open forum for you. Anytime you want the mic to get your activism out there, you know, it's here for you.
I appreciate it. The more I get the word out, the better. So make sure you get out and vote.
Fucking do something, aren't we the people, man? Thank you again.
My pleasure.
Today we are powered by SWATMMA.com. That's my friends Jeff and Julian at SWAT MMA Extreme and Fitness in Winter Garden, Florida. From jiu-jitsu to personal training, kickboxing, Muay Thai, or just all-around fitness, you really need to check out my friends Jeff and Julian at SWATMMA.com. They will change your life.